I'm hoping that the slides will speak for themselves, since I am not entirely able to speak for myself today. But as someone in my office said, at least you'll be softer spoken. So I'm normally a very loud voice, but I'm very grateful for this machine today. The work I'm going to present is on the Recoup project that we were all involved in between 05 and 2010. But we've taken, as we all do, that research forward. So one of the things that has happened in the last 3 years is public-private partnerships is now a global project. It's quite different around the world. It's also different in different sectors. But within education, there are quite different things being done. Public-private partnerships in the Latin American context is already a private model. It's more about the conditional cash transfers and how to improve them. So they've already gone into the private sector. In the part of the world that I'll be talking about today, South Asia, they're very new. In fact, there has not been till 5 years ago, actually till the end of our project, any documentation on the role of public-private specifically in education. Public and private has been around in both Pakistan and India as far back as 2005, but in infrastructure. So just very interesting, the actual entry point. So a number of us have now been involved in trying to think about both the conceptual logic of how PPPs emerge, and of course the consequences that we're interested in, most of us, are issues, and it might seem odd, I'm trained as an economist until I finished my PhD and decamped to the Development Studies Center, and a lot of us look at efficiency issues. But the fact that we're interested in this research is the equity issues, and it has been a challenge, both in the Recoup project, as well as subsequently, to try and bring equity into the debate, not just from the access point of view, but far more from quality and outcomes point of view. So I'm going to give you a flavor, actually only of India, because my voice will probably run out and I already have too many slides. So if you're interested in Pakistan, that has already been published. There are three publications, two articles and a book that's already out. India, you're seeing for the first time. I've only started working on the India data since the last 2 years, and the first presentation was in September at ACFEET. So I'd love to hear your feedback, because I will be presenting next week at CIES on the India and Pakistan comparisons. So you're doing me a favor, which is why I wanted to do the presentation. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so let's see if this works. Help. Doesn't want to work. Nidhi.
Okay, what if I just put my chair there?
No, but I'm sure it should be, because when he did it, it worked.
Of course he did it, it worked.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's always like that, acknowledgement.
Really? Oh, it's not this, it's that. Okay, I feel better. It just froze.
It has frozen, I'm sorry.
Should I just do that? Well, that's easy then. Up? How do I go up?
Well, do you want to go back?
Yeah, there's one slide we missed. Okay, and then I just tap every time. I'll just stand here and tap, that's fine. That's great.
Ooh,
I feel very motivated now. Okay, I tap my finger. So we started this project on public-private partnerships based on rather old formulation in economics, in the economics of education, where Albert Hirschman, who's probably one of my gurus, if I have a guru in development thinking, because he identified himself as someone who trespasses boundaries. And he trespassed happily between economics, sociology, and education. Very powerful writer, though I'm told that's dangerous in an education faculty. Madeline told me he is on the wrong side. I don't know. I actually think he's on the right side. Hirschman has a very interesting argument about choice, about school choice, about choosing between public and private schools. Very contextualized to that of the United States. He's a very careful thinker. But he makes this interesting point that when you select between a public school, you walk away, you use exit, you leave to go to the private school. Clearly, that is evidence at one level that the parents are unhappy, or the students, and all students are unhappy. The consequence, he's asking, what is the consequence? He differentiates both on the demand and supply side. On parents and student side, that's demand, those who want education, and on supplier side. And in his argument, what should happen if the school choice model is working is, as people leave, schools become aware that their better children are leaving. And the reason the better children leave is not because children are somehow better, but their parents are more socioeconomically advanced and probably more educated and can evaluate the falling quality of education. So there's no comment here about quality of children intellect. It's more about the discernment. And that's a very, very particular term that Hirschman employs. But unfortunately, till we did our research, we found that Hirschman had never been discussed in relation to this quality of discernment. He makes the point that human capital gives you discernment. You can evaluate, and so you pull out the school quicker. Consequently, will the school out of which you pulled out, which would be the state school, respond? Now, it won't respond because those left behind are not voicing, so it'll take time. In his model, it's only time because everybody is going to school. So either you stay in the school or you move out. When we thought about this, because our model was about school choice, that's how Difford and others are looking at outcomes. Can you choose to go to school? Can you improve it? And the model, the Latin American model, that's why I refer to it, was very dominant in 05, because the whole idea about the conditional cash transfer, and that, if you don't know, is this model that has been around for 20 years, where donors tend to provide funds, which are then used by parents who want to improve the quality of their social service provision, who are in the lower socioeconomic groups. And they can go to a municipality, this happened in Chile as way back as 2000, can say, oh, we cost so much to go, say, take the bus to school. Here's my receipt of my ticket to take my daughter to school, and the state will reimburse you that through the municipal ability. So we were saying, okay, so if this is what's happening, then it should actually result in better returns. But of course, in South Asia, everyone doesn't go to school. So this discernment is actually far more unequal, because many children completing the secondary cycle in India are first-generation learners. So how relevant is the market where you're talking about PPPs in a new educational market? So we looked at Hirschman, but we looked at it for a South Asian mass, non-mass education context, or emerging or moving towards mass education context. We also realized that in the schools that we had, those of us who had worked in South Asia before, but we also found it true for sub-Saharan Africa, school is very much a social entity. It's not a commodity in the market, and you don't buy your school place. You don't think about, even in conditional cash transfers, school is where you go because everyone else is going. And that is usually because there still is, in many relatively deprived rural areas, only one government school. So everyone goes to school, everyone enrolls on the same day, or they don't. So this idea that the school somehow is purely an educational unit seems particularly contrived for the South Asian context. And our research was semi-structured, largely because the PPP sector had not been quantified, had not been surveyed. It was a new phenomenon. We didn't have statistics. Even now in India, we don't have full statistics on private schools. And we certainly don't have full statistics on private unrecognized schools, schools that are not yet registered. So it's a very uneven terrain. So we used exit voice and loyalty, and we suggested, according to the model, that firms think about a school as a firm. This is very much the commodity-driven model, that the schools or the firms will respond by improving quality. And this is not something I, a priori, expected to see in the developing country context where there isn't mass schooling, just to remind you what it says. Okay, so this is just how we started out. This is in the Recoup working papers. If you're interested, you can look at it. Basically says, this is where we think of ourselves as, in a market world where you can choose yes or no, exit or voice. Exit is walking out of the school, voice is staying in the school and shouting for better change. But the partnership model allows us to say exit and voice. So in the market model, you don't use voice, you just walk with your feet. In the partnership model, the question is, can you use voice and exit? And the reason you use voice this time is because the partnership has a public-private element, where the private element are the parents themselves. And this is very much based on the charter school model, which most of you in education know is a very specific, important in the US context, but very specific to the US. And we don't have models like that in many other countries. But that's really where we were in 2005 when we started the work. And then we tried to think about, to complete the story, if you have a grid like this, what about community-based schools? If you have a community-based school, there's only one school, you can't exit, you can complain. And then what about kids who are out of the school system? And how do you get into the school system? So the number of educational contexts that have to be filled in to complete the story. So much for the past. The objective of this study, and the field research was conducted quite late, 09, 010, mostly in 010, we wanted to look at, in the case of India, and the rest of my comments will be restricted to India. If you want to know about other countries, please ask in question and answers. In the case of India, because the Indian government, only in the current plan, in the movement of the 13th plan, has said categorically public-private partnerships are part of the education sector. If you look at the 11th plan and the 12th plan, in both there is, in the 11th plan there's a 5-page document which talks about the possibility. In the 12th plan there is a 1-chapter commentary on the role of PPP. In both of them it's more an access story, the last mile. We need, where difficult to reach populations. There is no commentary about the quality, the improvement. So in that sense, we looked at what would be private schools, NGOs, semi-religious, the classic category. I'm sure you spoke about this in your, at least with Shreya, the interesting idea, particularly religious schools, aided versus unaided schools. India has, all of South Asia has this interesting tradition, which goes back to the colonial period, where you have private schools that have been aided by the state. And that can go to land being provided at cheap rates, to, in some cases, very interesting, even part of the salary of the teachers being paid. So a whole range of partnerships that existed for 100 years, even before this. And of course, in Pakistan, the school grouping of madrasas has become quite important. Statistically, there have been more surveys on that in the last 10 years. But what we're interested in is determining the impact of this new provision on the poor. And though we're interested in how this relates to exit voice loyalty, loyalty, by the way, is a third part of Hirschman's model, least discussed in the original Hirschman, but very important. It's about your affiliation. How do you feel linked to the provider? So in the case of a trade union, you may hate what's happening in your sector, but you shout louder and louder because you feel a loyalty. I.e., if loyalty was less, would you shout so much? Would you leave? So it's similarly in the school context, does loyalty have any role to play? And we were also concerned with loyalty, of negative loyalty. Maybe you don't want to leave because everyone in your school's in that particular school, and it's a caste or other politics. If you leave, where will you go? So this was of interest, but we asked no questions on exit voice and loyalty because they're very alien, academic, top-down, conceptual terms. Our questionnaires and our interviews were entirely about how did you choose to go to school? What do you think of school? Did you move your child from school? How did you react when some unforeseen circumstance, like a child being beaten? So a lot of the focus groups were to draw the questions that would then help us to do the interviews. So we used a combination of focus groups and interviews, and focus groups before and after. And when I presented this at a WCCS conference 3 years ago, when the data was just fresh for India, people said, oh, that's very brave, because all methodology books tell you that you do focus groups to simply identify your interview or to feedback, and we've done both. But actually, it was the most helpful thing, to do a number of iterative rounds of mixed methods. I'm sure Nidhi will say a lot more about that in lectures that you have. It was very, very helpful for us. Okay, so that's our sample. We agreed on the same sample for most of the projects on the Recoup study. These are youth. We were interested in intergenerational views, so what youth were doing and what their parents thought, and both were important to us. So we chose a sample where, obviously, there had to be a private school and a government school, to have more than one school for choosing. We are fortunate that my study was done in the state of Rajasthan, and the district was Alwar, which is interesting because it's quite advanced educationally, even though it's not a very rich state, a district in that state. So it has quite a lot of school provision. It's only had 4 or 5 schools on each side. And obviously our interest was in youth who had changed schools. We had no matching of parent and youth, so we weren't interviewing the same parent for the same youth. But the parents and youth both had to have experienced a number of the schools because it was much more difficult to match for this. And of course in India, every caste was represented to the extent we could. Okay, and again we sampled the schools, maximum attendance of the children in the area. We were lucky that both in India and Pakistan we were able to do household surveys. That was very, very important. 1,000 households were surveyed in similar areas. It gave us a background context of what we would expect, and we could then draw on that. Okay, so interesting for this district in Alwar, my work was done in 2010, but there was the 2006 household census that was done at the beginning, and even in that period, look at the increase. These are anonymized change of name using the anthropological proposition, so these are not the names of the actual areas, but look at the increase in private schooling. It's a, clearly a phenomenon that's important. And lowest quartile and highest quartiles in terms of income variation of the households in our survey. So obviously, highest quartile, 73, 38, that kind of gives you an idea of the fact that there's a accessing, but a differential access. Okay, so the provider scenario, I want to talk about the supply side here, because we know the demand side probably is relevant, and that we've written, other people have also written, we've written some stuff. What was so curious was the huge heterogeneity in supply response to exit and voice, which is entirely absent in any mass education system looking at it in the West. So we had in the rural area a lesser number of schools, 8 small private schools, mostly started by individuals who belonged to the village previously, very often local political leaders or individuals of that sort. Urban, very much more prominent private schools, and some of them quite elite, quite recognized. People came from other districts to be in that, so you can see that difference. So here's some interesting things from the new providers, the smaller providers. So I've got it in Hindi and then darker in English. This is the idea of business that's there. So Mr. Sharma says, I found that we was scope for a private school and the government school was down. So as in the results of the government school were bad, so I have a business opportunity to start a school, which is a little bit different from another school, that's the urban school below, where he said, oh, we're doing this charity. And much more au fait with the gender equality debate. 30-40% of the girls are getting free education. Yeah, so you can see there's already heterogeneity between the rural and urban space in terms of what they're providing. And also there's competition between these two, because urban and rural are much more connected because of this earlier PPP and infrastructure. Lots of good highways between the rural areas and the urban areas. Provider perception is another one, small or private. The notion of pride. What happens in the private school is you give attention to children. We expect this. This is what differentiates the quality. But later I'll show you that this attention is important, but the qualifications of these teachers, however attentive they are, is somewhat lacking, because most of the teachers in these schools in the rural area are themselves GCSE equivalent, 10th pass, as we would say. In the urban area, there are good teachers who come and teach, but again, differential between rural and urban. But all of them have this very strong sense of our quality is better. It's almost like they've done a training in Hirschman. But there's a systematic deficit. It's not about the individual schools. Please don't consider that we're talking about individual providers as being the problem. The problem is the system of education. So what you've got here is a recognition deficit. The state, the local state, and the local private providers both seem to be working together. A school sets up. After 2 years of running as a private school, it then gets recognition. Now, this is perverse logic. How can you run a school before you get recognized? But unless you have the criteria, like the number of teachers and so on and so forth, you can't get recognition. So the first 2 years of kids are running in a school, are studying without a school that's recognized. So effectively, the certificate that they get, if they're passing year 10, doesn't hold. And so we find quite interesting, what did somebody say? Murky relationships, underhand relationship. And this is true for almost every school, and some of the best schools, schools that have prizes for the best class 10 student, but they weren't recognized for class 10. They're very proudly telling us about this prize student who'd gone to college. And so we started digging underneath and saying, where have these kids gone? You know, how do they get... So they register in the government school and take the exam in the government school, even though they're in the private school. And the government school is paid money by the private school. And when we talk to the local regulators, the education directorate, they said, of course we know. This is part of the process. But nowhere on paper is there any documentation that we've got from government statistics of Rajasthan that this is the process of recognition. So de facto and de jure are very, very different in this situation. And this was my favorite one. We had a list of teachers, none of whom anybody had seen. Even the principal nobody had seen, but we had a list. So how can parents demand improvements in this relatively opaque world of supply? They can't complain about infrastructure. They're accepting the new good, but how much of this purchase price? If I'm being an economist, how much of this purchase price is actually coming? It seems to be a functional model. where attention to the child is being recognized. But what does that attention mean? Does it actually translate into improved quality? And schools did not show a vision of future enterprise. They start a school, but they do see it more as like a gap-filling exercise. Business is down, government school's bad, I start a school. And many schools that were there in 05 at the start of the Recruit project, by the time I came along in 10, they'd gone. So there are gap-filling and they disappear. And so this is it, this kind of shifting. There were parents who were talking about schools who were no longer there. And that's interesting to us. So the problem is one of a restricted market. Parents are willing to pay more, but they're not that well able to discern. The older schools who are still there, have been there for 10 years, and some of these were there when our Indian partners, Recoup, Indian Partners Court, did a survey way back in 2001. They're exactly the same conditions. They pulled out their old school schedules. They don't look any different. So there are old schools, both private and government, who haven't improved. Why aren't they improving? Everyone's kind of, you know, what they say, the water lifts up all the boats. If there is this kind of push for improved education, my favorite one was a gentleman who had a BEd college in 4 years ago and was failing. That's a college for doing a bachelor's in education. And he'd moved it and changed it to a printing press. We went to interview him and he was sitting with all these machines around him. And he said, not good business. BEd's not good business. So I'm going to start a printing press in what was a school. And he sat 4 days in the printing press and 1 day in what was left of the BEd students because he had to finish the story. And of course, BEd students become the next generation of teachers. So in this faculty, particularly a little more worrying, I think. Many had identified ways to target better. Because you want the business model, you choose the better off families. Not sometimes the cleverer kids, but usually the better off families. Residential schools. There are boarding schools in villages. They're running the secondary, that's up to year 10, and senior secondary, even if they're registered to year 8. And these are positive because if somebody does well in a board exam, they put it up. So this is branding, saying we can get your kids to do better in the public exam. These residential schools do not have a separate boarding house. In fact, most of the schools in the village are old houses, broken down houses of the wealthier members who usually migrated to the city and are coming back. The top floor of the school is the top floor of the house, and that's where they live. And if you're doing the year 8 exam, which is the first public exam, the boys will be made to stay for 10, sometimes 15 days before the board exam when they study in school and the teachers come in. And the girls can't stay because India's a little more has got conservative ideas about adolescent girls. And in that context, the girls are brought in at 6 in the morning and sent back at 9 at night. And the owner provides a tractor for this to happen with a trailer at the back. So there's real keenness in to get these kids to pass because that will be a branding. But without recognition, without any quality, without any inspection, one wonders, these kids are not getting 96%. In the town, you got kids like that. In the town, you've got this coaching center that really pushes. The best model, which is in a district not too far away in India, it's called Kota. And in Kota, there are kids who have done so well, they actually get into the premier engineering institutions, the Indian Institute of Technology, which are kind of globally recognized. These kids are desperate to get in. And I had a moment of subterfuge because I wanted to know what is this brochure and the coaching. So my team said, you look like, you know, you have the foreign accent, you get on, you go and say that you're a mother who's come from abroad and would like her son to come back and study in this school. So it's the only time I've done subterfuge of this sort, but I went in. They believed me. I paid 500 rupees, I got this glossy brochure, and then I said, they call themselves Kota Classes. And I said, oh, are you a subsidiary of the Kota class? We will be soon. So even when it comes to that, they haven't got recognition, but they've got the brand. So it's the same logic. Okay. So this is commonplace. We know in the region, and definitely 3 of our 4 private schools in urban spaces are like this. He says, it's so logical. It's about the money. Recognition costs this much. It takes me 2 years to get there. I get recognition after 2 years. My profit is what determines my recognition rate. Till I get that 80,000, I can't afford it, so I have to wait for the kids to pay. It's like being in a landlord's house in Cambridge. He says, my first landlord was like that. I said, is there a cooker? Oh yes, after 6 months you pay rent, I'll buy the cooker, he said. I mean, I kind of had that moment of deja vu. I'm in a house, I'm paying for the non-cooker. And so this is, it is a system. A system not recognized, but part of this lack of recognition. And from the parents' point of view, there's a blurred outcome. Some are very satisfied because the government school their child went to was not good. So all our exit stories are clear. Where the government school's really bad, they're happy to get out. The others struggling to stay in the government school. Pankaj couldn't stay because he said the level is the same. I just can't afford it. There's no difference. And we want to know, can he complete the cycle? He says, can I complete the cycle in the private school? It's not much better than the government school. I may just have to move to the government school. I'm paying fees and doing the same thing. Happy to go to the private school, but then recognizing it's not different. Others are better off households. Their parents are willing to pay. And Pankaj says, those kids aren't getting a better education. That's his view. And there are major failures at the secondary level. This is my secondary, the class 10, class 12 interface. Who's responsible? It's a question that they were all asking. At the end, we asked them a question, how would you improve the relations between school and home? And they said, even the Brahmins, so do we have a caste system in India? The Brahmins are the ones at the top. Even they are not getting quality education. So the sense in these communities that, okay, we are lesser caste, we don't, but if they're not getting quality education, but everyone's moving to the private sector still. So what we see is privatization has put forth a new type of teaching. It's not about private schools providing the same education as the government school. It's commercializing, so education becomes a certificate to the next level. The coaching centers are specifically at year 10, 12 for kids to go on. But within the coaching center, all sorts of things happen. Most of these coaching centers, which are for preparing for professional exams, medicine, engineering, and to go to college, offer two for the price of one. We will let you do year 11 and 12, which is the plus 2 years, in 1 year. I mean, cut rate, okay? There's no labs. That all happens in the government school, which they're paying a link to. And the kids are coming at 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning, to do the load in 1 year. And they will learn. And on the student interviews, we had a lovely young man, second year student, and my colleague Claire did the interview. And of course, Claire is a teacher herself. So she sat and she asked him, and he knew page after page of the textbook, okay, the biochemistry textbook. And she asked him after about three such questions, what does it mean? He said, they don't ask that in the exam. And he's a very earnest young man. So clearly they are providing. And there's attention to the children. But the attention is to passing the exam. coaching centers are doing well. But we would still say it's poor quality of teaching. Because most of us, maybe we're wrong. Maybe this is what the commercialization of education has done. And the coaching centers don't innovate. Okay? They are interested in results, but they start and stop there. And they see it logical that these poor families who they're supporting should do it in 1 year rather than two. They see themselves very genuinely as filling a gap. But it's not meeting the educational levels for these young people to actually become employable. It's more appearance rather than content. And there are divided opinions. There are more knowledgeable parents, and they tend to be upper caste, tend to be better off. So here you can see Hirschman is beginning to make sense. They raised questions about teacher quality, spoke about the foolishness of less educated parents. Hirschman with a bit of a nasty tweak, right? And they had more knowledge. And some of the young people had. Amrita's parents are both secondary school parents who haven't completed, but they went to secondary school. They've done well. She chose science. Paulson, who's the young man I told you about who's in secondary chemistry, biochemistry. Parents are looking at infrastructure, teaching quality. But they're the exception. They're two out of our sample of 40. So Hirschman and the idea of discernment is there. But in the bottom half, there isn't a great deal more than the private teachers work hard, mehnat. They come to school. That's the notion. They stand over us. They help us learn by heart. That's what they're looking at. And so to just conclude, what about the government schools? Do they respond? They're very proud that they have good infrastructure, which is entirely the aided and government school model. They have big gardens and they have rooms, and they're not living, children are not studying in an old house, and that they help the poor. They have this sense of that they're doing more than their duty, and they blame the parents. Whereas the private school teachers support the parents because they're getting the fees. So here what we're seeing is, it's actually two models at play. You're getting parent satisfaction because they feel their children are being attended to by the teacher. But it's not necessarily a quality-based mechanism. And nobody acknowledges in the government school that there should be any security of teachers. Nobody says the teachers are absent. According to the government teachers, none of them are ever absent, unless the government sends them away. And they are that. However, this is an illustration that government teachers feel a very great sense of under-professionalization of the last decade. They say things like, in the past, the government would send us to do census of human beings. We have an annual decadal census every 10 years in India. Now, they make us count goats and bullocks because we have a survey of livestock. Okay, they're very upset that their qualifications are being used to look after animals. And there's a sense of insult. They don't see any benefit that they should go and count goats. And well, if you don't count goats, you don't know about environment. But that's, you can see what they're saying. We can count human beings because we go and fill in a form and we make people answer. Why should we go and talk to goats? So lots of sense of negligence of teachers, not negligence by teachers. So quality improvements, not sure. Private schools, floating populations, hard at work, not paid well. Infrastructure remains very, very poor. No complaint at all. There's no functional toilet in 3/4 of these schools, for boys or girls. They all go at the back all and pee and come back. They struggle with schoolwork, the children. The teachers do take responsibility. And corporal punishment is used in private schools, not in government schools. In fact, two government school teachers said, how can we compete? We can't beat the children anymore. The government says, we can't beat the children. And parents do phone. They get phoned, they get summoned. So the PTA, those sides are coming about. Finally, government schools are the only option for the bottom 30%. We had 1,000 households, just looked at that quartile difference. They say that. Those in the government school, this is from the parents in the community and the teachers in the community. There's the teacher in one of the girls' schools. And she says, there's only the government school for them. That's why we work as hard. But you can see this, and it's them and us. And you don't get that in the private school, because very often in the rural areas said they're 10th past girls from the village itself. In the urban, the particularly a coaching center-linked private school brings in the best teachers from the entire area. And they're different rates. If you are a year 12 maths teacher who's regarded as really good in the urban center, you may get four times. Here's incentivization for us. We should sell ourselves out. You can get 1,000 rupees for an hour of teaching as a maths teacher. Whereas normally you'd get 400 rupees if you were doing tuition. So it's worth your while, 1,000 rupees per child, you know, you get quite a lot of money to support you. Okay, so that's my comments and my voice I'm going to give up, so please, add questions.